Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the City Council Chambers. Today is Wednesday, February 29th, 2012. It is Leap Day. So those of you that only get to celebrate your birthdays every 4 years, a special happy birthday to you. It's 9:30 a.m. and City Council will come to order. Good morning, Carla.
Good morning.
Did you see any snow or heavy rain this morning?
Not much.
Not much. Did you drive carefully and slowly?
I did.
Okay. You are a model for the rest of us. Can you please call the roll?
Fritz.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman. Leonard.
Here.
Adams.
Here. Quorum is present. We shall proceed. Beginning with communications, can you please read the title to item number 182?
Request of Andrew Frazier to address council regarding small business in Portland. Mr. Frazier called. He will be rescheduling.
He was snowed in.
Was it snowy at your house?
Okay. That gets us to the consent agenda items. I'd like to pull item number 184 back to my office. Someone wants to pull 187. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay. So would you read those titles, please?
184, extend the terms of 2012 Charter Commission members.
So the Charter Commission decided to cease operation on Monday. So unless there is a disagreement, send this back to the mayor's office. Can you please read the title for 187?
Authorize a contract with David M. Corey, PhD, PC, to provide psychological examinations for the Portland Police Bureau.
This will be discussed on the regular agenda. Are there any other items or any other discussion on the consent agenda? If not, can you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance item number 200?
Did you want to do the time certain?
I don't have it. Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
183.
My apologies, of course. Are we at 9:30 yet? Yes. Can you please read the title for the time certain report? Item number 184.
183.
183. Sorry, 183.
Accept report on the Asian and Pacific Islander community in Multnomah County, an unsettling profile.
Commissioner Fritz.
This is the third of the reports following up from the Coalition of Communities of Color and expanding and going into more detail on the Asian and Pacific Islander community. And we very much appreciate everybody being here this morning. And whoever is going to do the presentation, please come on up.
Welcome to City Council. Glad you're here.
What did you think of the Charter Committee?
Good morning.
Hi, who'd like to begin?
Good morning.
Good morning, members of the council. My name is June Arima Schumann. I am co-chair for the Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon and represent a panel on the Coalition of Communities of Color. This morning, the members of the coalition are here to present the Asian and Pacific Islander community in Multnomah County, an unsettling profile. This report is one of six ethnic-specific reports being published this year. Others in the series are Native American, Latino, African American, Africans, and Slavic. In 2010, the coalition published Counties, Communities of Color in Multnomah County, an Unsettling Profile, that presented a comprehensive and comparative study of the inequities facing communities of color, immigrants, and refugees. The Asian and Pacific Islander report being presented this morning builds on that earlier report. For the first time, the complexities and the diversity among the 27 different API ethnic groups in Multnomah County are presented. Contrary to the myth of model minority, specific segments of the API communities are facing incredible difficulties. As members of the coalition, Asian Family Center of Urkel and Apano are proud to have been part of the development of this report. We want to acknowledge the broad and deep participation from Asian and Pacific American community members over the last 3 years. Their contributions, alongside the rigorous academic research and analysis, have helped to produce a powerful and detailed portrayal of the state of the Asian American, Asian and Pacific Americans in Multnomah County. With me to present the report this morning are Gerald Denoni, co-chair of the coalition, Dr. Ann Curry-Stevens of PSU, the principal investigator, Dr. Peru Wang and Lipo Cha of Asian Family Center at Urkel. I would also like to acknowledge members of the API communities and the coalition who are here in the audience to be part of this presentation. Thank you.
Good morning. Gerald Deloney, as you mentioned, I'm one of the co-chairs of the Coalition of Communities of Color, and it's certainly an honor to sit here with the API community to present their report. Just a little bit about the coalition itself. We've been in existence for about 10 years. And the PowerPoint is up good. And you can see that we came together because of our socioeconomic disparities shared by all. I think as we address things like institutional racism, I would like to really thank the City Council, Mayor Adams, and Commissioner Fritz for championing, after we gave our report, the formation of the Office of Equity. And I think that the most important part about forming that Office of Equity was that we talked about racial equity, because we understand that when we deal with race and we achieve racial equity, everybody's better. All other protected groups are better. The city itself is better and begins to use the valuable human resources that we have within our community. We think that it is a shame for everybody when your race and your socioeconomic status can determine your outcomes for success in our society. Long before the report was given and we formed ourselves 10 years ago, the results of the report were part of our internal intuition. We knew that these things were going on. And with the report presented in May of 2010, it just confirmed our intuition that as a group, we're all mutually in the same boat. And if we don't stick together and do that, and I'd like to end by saying that the coalition itself, by being together and doing this report and doing other things together, has demonstrated that people that come in from different cultures can come together, work cooperatively together for the good of all. Thank you.
Professor, morning. Welcome back.
Thank you. Our presentation today is a little different than what we've emphasized in the past with these reports. One of the biggest findings in this report is the way in which the community here differs significantly from the dynamics at the national level. And if you're familiar with that situation, in most measures, the Asian and Pacific Islander community outperforms whites in terms of incomes, in terms of assets, in terms of a wide array of socioeconomic features, including education. And so what we don't have that same situation here. And so what we're going to spend the first stretch of our time together doing is to explore what we've come to understand as the reasons for that. When we came before you in 2010 with the first report, we hypothesized at the time that this was an issue around the composition of the community, that there were more refugees here or more new arrivals here, and what this report does is unpacks these issues and indicates that this is not the case. And so what we're going to do is highlight some of those pieces and as well highlight a few of the new findings in this report that are quite phenomenal in their reach and their breadth. And so we're just going to begin with a reminder around the size of the community. We're looking at closer to 9% when we use conventional counts, when we recognize the culturally verified counts, which we're in the process of moving through the advice of an expert panel on. We're looking at a population for the API community, which is just over 10% of Multnomah County's population. The graphic representation of this is, again, just a very quick reminder that we're looking at verging close towards 1 in 3 members of Multnomah County being a community of color, and very close to 1 in 2 public school-age children being children of color. So this is a rapidly, it's important to remember the pace of change in which this community is moving through. The API community itself is growing tremendously quickly. Although rates have slowed considerably in this recent decade compared to the prior decade, we're looking at growth rates that are about tenfold higher than the white community. So this is a community that is going to be becoming a larger percentage of Multnomah County in the years to come. We're looking here at a population with the community verified counts at just shy of 75,000 members in Multnomah County. So you've heard this story before around significant variations with the white community. The magnitude of this is illustrated in the chart that follows. And here we're looking at educational attainment levels that are significantly lower, at occupations, higher representation in the worst jobs, and lower representation in the better jobs. Income levels that are significantly different, and I have a chart for that, a more graphical representation on the following slide, and poverty levels that are, in the case of married couple families, 3 times higher than the white community. And housing being an important feature, home ownership is the place at which most middle-class people gather some wealth, build some assets that allows them to take risks and embark on things like career changes and moving into owning one's own business. The asset base of that for this community is significantly lower than for whites. So here's a slide of, very quickly, the annual incomes here compared to whites. And we're looking at incomes, though they're not half, in many cases they're significantly lower, that are close to a third lower than for whites. There is a bit of a perk in the retirement situation that is mostly because of multi-generational families living together at higher levels than among white communities. So yet the myth of parity exists. To the degree to which the community was left off considerations by Portland Public Schools and their racial educational equity policy, the discourse continues that this is a community that doesn't need assistance, that is doing quite well, and the national data, our understanding of the national data, tends to infuse policy responses. So what's happening at the national level? At the national level, we're seeing that, again, this is just sort of the numbers behind the difference at the national level, where occupations have a better profile than whites, incomes are better, higher education presence is higher, being vulnerable and needing SNAP supports is lower, and the unemployment level is better. So this is the national story. What is happening here? So what we're going to take a look is what's happening explicitly now for the API community. And here we see that the local profile of poverty levels is much worse, especially for certain groups where the national data is significantly troubling for the across the API community here. And you've seen this chart before where we're looking at a comparison of how the API community is doing compared to their national counterparts on incomes. And this is a magnitude we haven't seen. The magnitude of difference has not been seen at this levels for any others of other the communities, where we're looking at married couples raising kids earning about $23,000 a year less than their national counterparts. And over on the right-hand side, we've talked about this before, again, where the white community receives this differential perk of having an address in Multnomah County compared to our national averages. So again, this is the dynamic of the community here faring very poorly compared to national counterparts, made worse in terms of it being juxtaposed with the perks that exist for the white community. So why doesn't parity exist here? And we looked here at a few different elements around the regional variations, the compositional questions, and we end up with a conclusion that matches other communities of color around pronounced and unfortunately ongoing issues of institutional racism. So, as you know, we've looked at the comparison with the West, with Seattle, home to King County. And on every measure we're looking at, and here's a number of those features, we're looking at a significantly worse situation, even within the same region, for Multnomah County. So we're looking at worse levels of child poverty, higher rent burdens, lesser access to the management and professional occupations, and significantly less likelihood of being of holding a university degree. On the income levels, we compare, we look at what's happening both at Multnomah and King County and compare that with what's happening for the white communities as well. So the year-round full-time work is earning approximately a quarter less, 25% less, than Asians in King County. So this is not a dynamic that's unique to the West Coast. If it were, it would be equally bad in both regions. We then wondered about composition, which is really where we thought the explanation would land. And so what we're going to look at is we would expect that newer arrivals would have a harder chance getting a toehold in this economy. And so here's what we're looking at. Our profile here locally is actually, we would expect it to be stronger than the national averages. We have fewer new arrivals compared to the national level, and we have more native-born in the API community. That explanation doesn't hold, therefore. So what we would have expected that, if that was a good explanation, a compositional explanation of why the community is struggling. So now let's look at the composition of refugees. If you look to the totals at the bottom there, on that chart, we see a significantly higher level of refugees in this region compared to the national average. The most variance exists for the Vietnamese community, where 27% of the Asian community is from Vietnam, whereas only 11% of the national levels from Vietnam. Fortunately, this community has been is sizable enough to then let us get at the next level to see how does the Vietnamese community do here compared to the national profile. And what we have, here's where we're going to see these, see a more in-depth look for the Vietnamese community. So here we have some good news that the Vietnamese community actually has lower poverty levels than for whites in 2008, and that the poverty level has dropped over that stretch of time. However, while those are poorest Vietnamese are doing fairly well, overall the community is struggling significantly, with annual incomes having dropped precipitously between 2000 and 2008, compared to a relative constancy for the white community. So the Vietnamese situation here locally compared to the U.S. is particularly, sorry, that last one was not with regards to the U.S. Here is where we compare it with the USA, where we have, approximately, again, a quarter lesser income levels compared to the national level of Vietnamese. So, again, something local is happening even within this relatively vulnerable community compared to its national comparators. And when we take a look at unemployment rates, we see the same dynamic with almost double the unemployment levels for the Vietnamese compared to their national comparison group in Multnomah County. This really serves as it's a very troubling dynamic to be seeing, even within a marginalized community that you would expect to not be doing so well, that the situation is worse locally than the Vietnamese elsewhere in the nation. Educational attainment, I just draw your attention to the access to higher education. Again, this is the national Vietnamese compared to the local Vietnamese. And the local Vietnamese are significantly facing more challenges in getting into higher education. So the conclusion being that if the refugee composition were to explain the situation, we would expect, because there are more Vietnamese, we wouldn't expect this differential pattern that we've seen in the last stretch of slides. And adding greater concern is the way that this community is losing a foothold economically in this region compared to the national averages. So by default, we come to the conclusion that there are local dynamics that are happening here for the Asian and Pacific Islander community that is very similar to the dynamics that are happening for other communities of color. And we turn to a focus on institutional racism in order to explain what's happening and to catalyze, ideally, comprehensive responses to the needs of the API community. The community is significantly challenged by access to decent data. You'll see in the final data chart we get to, when we break down the experiences of those communities within the overall API designation, when we break down and look at that, we see a ton of data we just can't get. It is particularly troubling. The diversity of this community is substantial. Diversities in language, diversities in refugee status, and you'll see diversities in life experiences and an ability to navigate most of our systems and institutions. And so there's a real pressing need to fill in those gaps, to press forward with ensuring that we look at a disaggregation of the API community as far as is feasible to take us. We also have a need to push back. We were able to get really good data from the 2000 census. The decision to drop the long form in 2010 has been particularly devastating. The levels of data that we have will never again be possible unless we oversample with that community and unless in 2020 there's a plan to bring back the long form. But the problem is when you do a survey, the numbers get too small. We can remedy that in a lot of our local institutions, and you'll see in the next few slides that we're able to do that by language within our school board data. But it's of particular concern to this community. We want to be able to track how well high-priority communities end up moving over the next few years to ensure that we're seeing positive progress. But our concern about the quality of data really needs to get remedied.
Can I ask a question, Professor? Are Chinese and Koreans included in Asian and Pacific Islanders?
Yes, they are. Okay. You'll see that there are some communities that are doing better than others, and we'll move to that very quickly. There's quite a variation. So we do have, we've added a few extra pieces of data here to show the magnitude, but I'll move through those more quickly than others to really emphasize what's new, especially at the disaggregation level. So here we have linguistic isolation. There's an urgent need to bring improved and accessible language training programs to help more immigrant and refugee communities be able to build skills in communicating in English. We have linguistic isolation means that nobody over the age of 14 in one's family speaks English in a way that one can communicate outside one's own community. And so we see the Thai and Vietnamese and the Tongan and the Indonesian and the Chinese being deeply challenged in this area. So it certainly should give us some direction to strategic investments so that language programs can help people navigate systems and also have greater prospects in higher education, in education, and also in employment.
Professor, I was a teacher for a day recently in Cully, an elementary school, and one of the things that struck me was the number of children in the classroom who did not have basic English skills. We were doing math problems, and people didn't have, and these are kids who are coming in and out of the program. So when you talk about linguistic challenges or isolation, to me, that could be a primary reason for a lot of things, not just a category. And yet you don't link that up earlier in your causality piece. Why is that?
There isn't a reason to believe that the language attainments of the Vietnamese community would be different here than on the national level. We also weren't able to look at that element numerically, but it would be hard to imagine that, for example, the Vietnamese community is more linguistically challenged here, but we didn't
do
have,
Do we? Is it because we don't have good data one way or another?
I think the community narrative would be able to confirm that, and it's an interesting question that would bear some looking at.
I only state it because watching the children in the classroom, the kids that did not have English skills were not following what was going on,
yes.
and I can't imagine that gets better unless that's remedied. And
yes.
So I would think that's a pretty significant factor that we can identify. It'd be interesting to know how we do relate nationally. The other question I just want to ask you, I don't mean to interrupt your stream of thought, but a lot of the events I go to with my wife, with members of this community, I'm struck by how many people at the event do not live in Portland, but live in tight-knit communities in the metropolitan area. Have you compared any of, have you done any research to look at metro conditions versus Portland or Multnomah County, and also whether there is any correlation between how developed a community is and how tight-knit and the sort of settlement patterns to impacts? Because, again, Cambodian New Year's Eve, I follow polo to events, and frequently I meet people who are from well-established communities in Beaverton and Tigard and other places in Portland, and I'm struck by these are mature settlement patterns with family members creating community. Community in turn supports people, and I wonder to what extent that is a factor.
We haven't been able to look at that. It would take another significant initiative to understand the metro-wide data and to gain access to it. We haven't looked at that. Certainly the ability of especially established communities to protect community members, to serve, to reinforce resilience, to reinforce a sense of belonging as a protective factor against stress and well-being. Those are all really important pieces to help develop in terms of how we could generate a stronger community identity is an important policy matter, especially in land use planning issues and development issues.
Thank you.
If we look at educational attainment levels, this is one of the places at the aggregate level where the differences are quite pronounced, especially in the history of one's likelihood to have not completed high school. Our next slide here is the first time we have taken school board data and pulled it apart by language. This is the best understanding of what's happening at our school boards in terms of how different parts of our community are doing. This is the measure of the achievement gap, those students that have met or exceeded benchmarks in the OAKS testing scores. And as you can see, there is a huge variation from the a high level in the Japanese community at 95% to a disastrous level of 0% in the Karen community. What that means is that none of the kids in the Karen community have met or exceeded testing scores in reading and literature.
Karen community?
Yes.
Not Korean?
No,
oh, okay.
The Karen community.
Burmese. It's a Burmese group.
Burmese, okay.
So this certainly gives us some pause, some contemplation around where our investments most needed, which are the communities that are struggling most deeply, and can give us a sense of priorities for focused attention. We then took an average of the math and reading scores in the communities and rank ordered them in terms of how they're performing in our school boards. And we're looking at a significantly large number are certainly below the white community level, and it gives us a sense both in the Pacific Islander communities, which are the ones that are bolded, as well as the Asian-based communities in terms of, again, where our priorities rest. cohort graduation rates, if you know the current data, we have some we have positive signs that the Asian and Pacific Islander community today is performing better than the white community. Of concern is that this is a level that has dropped from 2009 to 2010, and we need to make sure that that trend reverses. High school graduation rates, I'm just going to do a very quick time check. Okay. I'm going to move very quickly through these slides and get to some additional new data. So just to say what we have here, high school graduation rates are better than white, or graduates who are intending to enter higher education are doing better than the white community. The pattern is a little troubling that we're seeing a leveling off and perhaps a dropping while the correlate white community is increasing its hold and its intentions to move into higher education. Mount Hood Community College, the level of Asians in that in technical degrees and being able to successfully get through is on the decline, which is troubling. You may know that health insurance is stronger for the API community than for whites, but look at how tight that magnitude of difference is. So this is Oregonians without health insurance, and this gap is narrowing and in all likelihood may invert again. In the health arena, low birth weight babies is a particular concern and a particularly troubling trend. There's some worsening of health outcomes for infants. Civic engagement is steadily improving in terms of both voter registration and significantly in 2008 in terms of voter turnout at the statewide level. Civic engagement efforts have been pronounced with some of the member organizations of the coalition, and this is some of the fruits of that in addition to the community's greater involvement in political issues over time. City of Portland, full-time employment levels has increased since 2009, but has not increased the levels that the community sees as being an appropriate target. And the reminder there is that we continue to have a dynamic with whites holding more than our fair share of city jobs, which tend to be better paid, better working conditions, more security. Access to funding from foundations. This is an area where these funds have been publicly subsidized because they're charitable the way they've been handled through the tax system. Of concern, this is an area where dominant discourse really narrows, again, the opportunity for the community to get a sense of fair share of charitable dollars, where the community is deeply underrepresented in terms of how much foundation funding is available. We turn to the final piece of data, which is the question that the community asked us to respond to, which communities are struggling the most. And so what we end up with, and you'll see in this next slide the details of these, but we looked at in a range of items where we had a significant amount of data, and we end up with a priority of 4 Pacific Islander communities, of 5 new and refugee-based communities, of 2 older refugee-based communities, and a surprise, 3 more established immigrant communities. We didn't anticipate this kind of breakdown by the feature. We simply looked at the numbers and said, on the basis of this chart you see here, who is struggling the most? We actually, in the full report, have the full data on each of the communities for whom we had any data at all. And you can see all those white spaces means that no data is available for this community. You'll also see, if you look at greater depth at some of the report information, some of these figures are now 10 years old or 12 years old because we had to use the 2000 data because it was the most available that was accessible to us. You'll see that the choice of some of these communities was simply based on a single point of data, which was that education gap, meeting the Oaks testing scores. So simply on the very weak performance, the deeply challenged experience, on that basis, some of those communities made it into that high priority list. So the community is not saying every other community is doing fine, but this is the list of priority for priority attention that the coalition is seeking. I now turn this to Dr. Peiru Wang for discussion of recommendations.
Hi, I'm Peiru Wang and from Urko Asian Family Center. Thanks again for having us here. We just heard a lot of statistics about on Asian and Pacific Islander communities in Multnomah County. Behind those numbers are heartbreaking stories and day-to-day struggles. We applaud the city's past efforts in helping communities through programs such as the Children's Levy that funds organizations of color in increasing the city's focus and in increasing the city's focus on equity through the office equity. But we need to do more, and we can do more. We hope the mayor and commissioners will continue your commitment in these areas. When the Coalition of Community Color released its first report, An Unsettling Profile, we listed policy recommendations. Now we are highlighting policies that are a priority for the Asian and Pacific Islander communities. The four priorities are poverty reduction, social inclusion and language training, education equity, and the visibility of the entire API community. In the area of poverty reduction, we're asking that the city recognize culturally specific services as the most effective way to serve community of color. We recommend expanding the availability of cultural specific services, as well as limiting mainstream services that claim to serve community of color but don't have the capacity to do so. In the area of social inclusion, we're asking the community of color be invited to the decision-making tables as a standard and of best practice policy and program evaluations. Right now, these kind of invitations depend on the existence of allies at various levels of government. Policies should include meaningful and authentic community participation and consultation with the intention to develop civic leadership in the community of color. In the area of education equity, the data shows that in academic achievement, many API communities are struggling. Those communities need comprehensive and intensive supports. We support the city's commitment through the mayor's office to the Cradle to Career Collaborative that is focused on eliminating racial and ethnic educational disparities. We ask the city continue to be a strong partner in the collaborative. In the area of visibility of the entire API communities, as you can tell from the data, the API communities are really diverse, coming from so many different cultures and speaking so many different languages. When there exists no data for our most vulnerable communities, we don't know how the city are serving and how they are being served. We're asking the city to use of cultural appropriate data and research practices across the bureaus. Research and database reforms are essential to ensure that there is routine and accurate desegregation of the API community. And now I'm turning to Mr. Lee.
Can I just ask a question on that? Because you mentioned that the long form is not being used anymore. And Commissioner Kafoury and I were on the Complete Count Committee working hard on that issue. In the absence of we had our own challenges getting people to trust filling out that form and feeling confident that the data would be protected. Do you have a suggestion about how we can collect, what the city's role might be in collecting better data?
At one level, we need for intake forms to include stronger options for self-identification by one specific community. So the coalition has been working on an alternative proposal for how to support more expansive racial identification. Sometimes we have stronger identification, but then those get aggregated by the administrators of the databases. So that's an important piece to look at as well. We are inviting somebody to sit on the expert panel to the review the counts who's from the Census Bureau, and we're at the very early stages of also asking them if they can oversample in the American Community Survey in a way that might give us stronger data at the local level, disaggregatable.
Mayors and City Council, I just like to take this opportunity to really thank you for your leadership and giving us the support to make this crucial research and demographic data study done. I know that way back we have came to you and asked for your support for this great research project, and which now you see the result of all of this data. I know that there are many areas that you know, we are not so proud of to know, but at least we know the reality of our regions, and in particular citizens of you know, our cities and our county. And so with that, you know, I just really wanted to let you know that you know, as city leaders, you have moved in the right directions with community of color, that you know, at the end, I'm hoping that hopefully 3 to 5 years from now, we'll be able to come back and say that we have made progress in certain area. It doesn't matter what communities or what color of our citizens, we as Americans have made great strides and great improvement in our region. And so, again, on behalf of the coalitions of community of color and the API community, I just really like to take this opportunity to thank you for your leaderships and giving us the opportunity to work with you. So thank you.
Thank you all very much. We appreciate it.
Questions?
How many people have signed up, or did you have?
Oh, yeah, just one question, I guess. When you presented the table, I guess it's on page 196 of your report, that had a very thorough listing of all the Asian Pacific Island Islander communities and problems in their achievement. I guess I'm looking for sort of a gang involvement overlay on that. Which of these communities have gang involvement? And I'm looking at Lee. He could probably answer that off the top of his head.
Commissioner Salzman, I think that's a very good question, and that is still a very crucial issue or great concern to the Asian Pacific Islander community. I think, indeed, working very closely with the law enforcement bureau, our police bureau, we know that Asian Pacific Islander gang violence is still an issue that we continue to battle. And so just a little bit of a perspective or historical, you know, point on that is that if you look at it in the 80s and maybe the 90s, we're really looking at African-American gangs and Asian gangs are the most, you know, dominant gang violence in our town. But today, there's a little bit of a trend. I think we can say that maybe with all the hard work that we have done, even though Asian gangs violence may not be on top of the list, but it does not mean that we are definitely have addressed this issue 100%. Currently, right now, I think our African Americans and our Latino, you know, youth gang are the more concerned today. And even if you look at the, you know, over representation of minority youth in the system, those still very reflected of the Latino and our African American and next to the Asians. And so to say that we have made some progress in the Asian community when it comes to that, maybe we can claim that credit. But at the same time, you know, we're not yet to say that that issue is not completely gone. So,
yeah, and I guess what I'm trying to get at, and I appreciate what you're saying, but which of these communities have the gang involvement? I mean, I would imagine there's issues in the Hmong community, perhaps gang involvement in the Hmong community, or there has been in the past. But
well, certainly, probably if you want to go probably that
not
route.
Probably not the Nepali community is what I'm guessing. And I was just wondering if, you know, like if there's a little column that said propensity for gang involvement.
So if you can go in that route, if you wanted to identify and call out like that, I can also share with you. I mean, certainly our Vietnamese community, the Hmong, the Lao, the Laotian, the Mian, the Cambodian, the Chinese, the Filipino. And so I think these are some of the well-known gang involvement kids that we know of. One thing that I try to avoid is just to not really call out any community, so that way we cannot, you know, look at them with any sort of negative connotation. That's what I'm trying to avoid. Yeah,
and I'm not trying to imply a negative connotation either. I just think it's an important piece of information for us to be cognizant of as we're trying to improve the outcomes for the Asian Pacific Islander community. We know that gang involvement can not only lead to horrendous circumstances of death or prison, but it can also certainly affect educational performance as well. So that's why I was asking.
But indeed. Thank you. Yes.
And I would just underscore the success is always fragile, but there's been significant improvement under your watch, Commissioner, and with our community partners. And again, it's always fragile, but it is real. The numbers show real success at addressing the issue. So thank you to all involved. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you all very much. How many people signed up?
No one else signed up.
Okay. Then please call the vote on accepting, or I'll take a motion to accept the report.
So moved.
Been moved and seconded. Please call the vote on the motion to accept the report.
Fritz?
Well, once again, thank you all for being here today, including some of our young folks from Apano. And thank you for doing this report. It is indeed unsettling, and we need to be unsettled. It was clear to me in 2009 with the State of Black Oregon report, became even more clear with the Communities of Color report in 2010, that we collectively in Portland have a problem. And that's why the mayor and I have been working with the community over the past year to figure out what the Office of Equity and Human Rights should be and how it's going to start functioning, which it will by the middle of March have a new director in place, and we will be able to move forward with the community and the government working together, which is key to solving some of these challenges. I'm still amazed by when I go around in the community, people say, well, the $525,000, that's a lot of money. Why don't you fill potholes with that money? And it's true that $525,000 is a lot of money, and also that when we look at the magnitude of some of these inequities, it's going to be very challenging to make meaningful progress in the time frame that's needed. Because let's remember, we're talking about real people here. The report has bar charts and statistics, and each one of those statistics is made up of individual children, families, communities. And we need to recognize the urgency of this challenge that we all face. And it's a challenge for all of us, no matter what our ethnicity, our background, our the challenges that each one of us face. We're all in this together, and we have to make changes so that our whole community works together and it prospers together. I really appreciate the partnership of folks in the community who are willing to suspend disbelief that government can be part of the problem. It can also be part of the solution. And many of the immigrant and refugee communities come from places where the government was definitely part of the problem and never part of the solution. So we have that challenge to overcome as well. That's a feeling sometimes shared by a lot of folks who've lived here for a long time. And so the challenges are huge, but the will to succeed is also immense. And the partnerships are growing. We will succeed. We cannot fail. Aye.
Fish?
Well, thank you for another outstanding report. With good data, we can start to put in place new policies to address the challenge. Next Wednesday, the Parks Bureau is going to set aside, with its Parks Board, a two-hour block to talk about its equity agenda. I got a draft report recently from Danielle Ledesma, who's in charge of equity programs at the Housing Bureau. We have an equity business plan that we've developed with the community, which, again, starts with the data that has been developed and starts talking about solutions and specific changes in policy. We have to go through this exercise of documenting first. But the rubber hits the road when we start changing our policies to address the solutions. And I appreciate particularly the focus on solutions and proposed ideas for how we move past the problem to begin to welcome more people into the circle of opportunity in our community. So thank you for your outstanding work. Aye.
Saltzman?
Again, thank you for the report. I think it is puzzling. I think it's puzzling still that Asian Pacific Islanders are doing worse in Portland than they are nationwide. And I'm not sure and I appreciate the analysis that was gone through to try to identify other factors. And then the final factor that seems to emerge is institutional racism. Well, I'm just not sure. I think there's something else here, and I'm just not sure what it is. And institutional racism, to me, is just sort of the default statement. We can't figure out anything else, therefore it's institutional racism. I'm not sure that's what's at work here, although the analysis does certainly provoke a lot more questions and a lot of data to look at. But I think the bottom line is that we, like other communities of color, we need to work more for inclusion, participation, and to make sure that the needs of this community is met through a variety of things the city and county are involved in. And I think, including, the composition of our own employees, too. I think that was pointed out as well. So it's good work and good information, and thank you. Aye.
Leonard.
I, too, appreciate the thoroughness of the report. And for myself, since I've been here, when given the opportunity to hire people of color, sexual minorities, or women, all other things being equal, I hire them. And I say that to people often. If you want to increase the number of women and minorities and people of sexual orientation, then hire more women, minorities, and people of sexual orientation. And in 10 years, that has served me and I think the community well. And I would offer that simple recommendation to my successors and my colleagues here. I think we do have a lot of work to do. I would disagree with Commissioner Saltzman. I do think people in the majority have an almost subconscious reaction to people that don't look and talk like they do. Having grown up in a community of color, I think I was more attuned and sensitive to that than others of my race, and I think it's an issue we still struggle with. I don't think people intentionally make conscious decisions to discriminate, but I do think subconsciously people react in ways that they'd be surprised if they were outside of themselves looking back, that they were behaving in such a manner. So I do think we have a lot of work to do, and I appreciate this helping us focus our attention.
Adams.
Well, I want to thank Commissioner Amanda Fritz for your leadership on this issue, and I think that the hiring process that you went through yielded some amazing choices to choose from for leadership. And that the leader that you've chosen to lead this office is just a great pick. So I look forward to having him in the community. I found it really useful to sort of take in for myself, and reasonable people can disagree and have other points of view, but I've profoundly came to understand when I ran for mayor and wanted to make an impact on this issue, and knowing that I'd been part of the institution for a long time, I went through some consultation and talked to others about, what worked and what didn't work. And one of the things that was missing is a basis of fact. And that's been more than being fulfilled with the work, the piece we saw today and the earlier work from the Coalition of the Communities of Color, we got the Native American report. We'll get the other reports, the State of Black Oregon. And after sort of spending time and digesting that, I realized that part of my definition of institutional racism was the fact that we had a lot of fact-based, accountable, comprehensive, and coherent strategies for a lot of things in this city. And that when this city takes that approach, kind of geeky, not necessarily sexy, but takes that approach, whether it's recycling or smart transportation, that we get results. And the fact that we didn't have a comprehensive, coherent, and accountable strategy or a organizational focus that was effective in city government to work with other governments and the private sector and everyone else in the city, the fact that we were missing that was institutional racism, not out of malice, but by omission. So that's a lesson that I've learned, and it starts with this sort of basis of fact, and then putting the strategies together that some things will work and some things won't work, but with the Office of Equity, the effort will continue, and it'll continuously improve, and we will continuously perfect. We'll make fact-based decisions until we get to where we need to be, which is the city that offers the most equal of opportunities, that a city that shows others what it means to be a city of equity. So I really appreciate your work, and I want everyone else who hasn't been here before to know how grateful we are for you to be here and how committed we are to this work. And for those that are running to fill our seats, ask them the tough questions, because we'll need them to be just as enthusiastic about it. Thank you. Aye. That gets us to the regular agenda. You're welcome to get up and leave if you wouldn't mind doing so quietly until you hit the door, and then you can scream as much as you want. Can you please read item, regular agenda, emergency ordinance 200?
Authorize a grant agreement with Janus Youth Programs, Inc. for shelter beds and treatment for juvenile human trafficking victims and two additional victim advocate positions for a 5.5-month period in the amount of $113,378.
Well, this has been an effort that I've worked on with Commissioner Dan Saltzman and the county, and including County Chair Jeff Kogan and Multnomah County Commissioner Diane McKeel. It's been a great labor of focusing on a very difficult thing for people to accept. It's easier to deny that this is an issue in the city than it is to truly accept it and invest in stopping it. So Janus Youth Programs, the Sexual Assault Resource Center, the Commercial Sexual Exploitation of Children Committee, the Portland Police Bureau, we've been working hard to protect victims of human trafficking, for those who sexually exploit them for financial gain, by providing shelter, secured shelter, and providing services. The grant, the approval for this grant was provided in the city's last budget cycle. However, the grantee had carryover funds from the last grant, because you are so frugal, to conduct this important appreciated work, and our office has been working with the grantee to recalculate its needs since then, which has resulted in a grant for $113,377.71 rather than the $150,000 allocated in the budget. And I want you both to know how much I appreciate your work at leveraging these resources and working with our partners at Multnomah County to really put together in very short order something that we've needed for a long time. Is there something you want to say by introduction?
No, that's very impressive that you're actually asking for less money than we originally appropriated. But I really appreciate the work that Janus Youth is doing in providing this very necessary shelter for primarily young women, and the case management that is so important to their ability to get out of the lifestyle of prostitution and actually stay out of it. And I assume you're going to give us a little update. So,
welcome. Great. Yeah, so Dennis Morrow, Executive Director, Janus Youth Programs, and Kevin Donegan is our Program Director for our Runaway and Homeless Youth Services, who oversees the shelter. We're just here to answer questions you may have. We do have some data for you we can leave with you, but I want to first say the council item says Janus Youth Grant, and it really isn't a Janus Youth Grant. It really is a Multnomah County City of Portland community grant. Janus was selected in July of 2010 to put together with the community to facilitate the creation of a plan under working with the county, and we remain the agency that is responsible for coordinating the services that are being delivered. But this is a wide array of services that, as you mentioned, includes the Sexual Assault Resource Center, but also includes a very close relationship with LifeWorks Northwest, very close relationship with the State Child Welfare. DHS in Multnomah County has set up an identified team just to work with these girls. That's happened nowhere in the country that we know of. The Portland Police Bureau has an identified team. That has not happened in other places. We had a national conference in Portland, I believe it was in November, with over 700 representatives from programs like ours that are funded by the federal government around the country. We took the top feds on a tour of the continuum in the shelter and said to them, do you see this anywhere else? And they said, no, but we need you to come help start it somewhere else.
Wow.
So we're really excited because this is a piece, and it's the city's investment in the piece, but it's crucial because the first step to getting girls off of the street is a safe place to take them. And what we can tell you is basically, if you look at these numbers, you'll see in the first 8 months of this year, we've had 64 episodes, but that's 41 girls, mostly girls. Because as we